Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Introducing the Ask This Old House podcast, from the Emmy-winning PBS series that has inspired generations of home enthusiasts. Each week, the trusted experts at Ask This Old House share exceptional home improvement advice with homeowners from around the country. On this week's episode, Teresa from Colorado Springs asks electrician Heath Eastman how to replace recessed lighting with a ceiling fan and a chandelier. Subscribe to Ask This Old House podcast for free, wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to The Upgrade, the podcast from the team at Lifehacker, where we help you improve your life one week at a time. I'm Alice Bradley, editor-in-chief of Lifehacker.
And I'm Jordan Calhoun, Lifehacker's deputy editor.
And today we are finding freedom.
Yes, we're finding our psychological and emotional freedom. We're breaking free from our mental prisons, and we're getting help from psychologist and Holocaust survivor, Dr. Edith Eger.
The way I think, that's what I create. So be a take-charge person. Your thinking, your feeling, and your behavior.
Dr. Eger is the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Choice, Embrace the Possible, which is her memoir about surviving Auschwitz. Her most recent book, The Gift, 12 Lessons to Save Your Life, is her guide to navigating life's most complicated challenges. In it, she details approaches on how to break free of the mental prisons of fear, grief, victimhood, and so much more. Edith had just celebrated her 93rd birthday when we spoke with her, which is just incredible.
Alice, we get to talk to a Holocaust survivor that's like survived multiple concentration camps and the death march and talks a lot about resiliency and getting through the worst times. It's insane.
Unbelievable. And what really struck me was just the joy radiating off her. You know, she just seems to just really deeply enjoy herself. She enjoyed us. She complimented your dimples right away.
Right away. And, you know, that really wins me over. Just the flattery right off the bat. I was smitten.
You were done. You were done for. She actually, I have to say, she said, "I love your dimples." And I went, "I don't have." Oh.
Oh, that's great. When it comes to resilience, Alice, do you think that, I mean, normally when you think about resilience, do you think of it as a skill that you can learn, or is it something that you feel normally that people are born with, like they have it or they don't?
Oh, I would hope it's a skill, right? Because if you just don't have it and you're thrown into the kind of situations we all find ourselves in these days, that would be bleak. I do think it's a skill. I think thinking of it as a skill also really helps, because it doesn't help anything to think I'm just not a resilient person, right? But if
right.
we all have that growth mindset of you know, you can learn this, which I really believe you can, then we're all going to get much farther.
Absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree with that. Let's go into the interview with that mindset then. And I'm sure Dr. Eger is going to have some suggestions on how we can build that skill.
Let's do it. Dr. Eger, welcome to The Upgrade. So great to have you.
I'm so happy to show up for you. Thank you.
Wonderful for you to be here. So you've gone through unimaginable horrors. Your backstory is so compelling and harrowing and inspiring. Can you tell us a little bit about what got you here and what started you on your journey to your practice?
Well, I was born into a very talented family. My older sister Magda was playing the piano, and my sister Clara was a child prodigy in violin. And my parents really were expecting a son, and then I came along. And also, my sisters were blindfolding me because when they took me for a walk, they didn't want anybody to see their ugly sister because I was cross-eyed. And to top that, my mom looked at me very seriously and said, I'm glad you have brains because you have no looks. And I think today I ask people to really not allow anybody to define who you are, because you're one of a kind diamond. There'll never be another you, and how to really be a good parent to you. So now that we have this time out period, it can be used for people not to go back, but to have a new beginning and to give birth to the you that was meant to be, and to find freedom. And freedom really means to let go, to be able to forgive, especially yourself, because I had tremendous survivor's guilt. I graduated cum laude, and I never showed up for my graduation because I didn't give myself permission to pick up that degree. I said to myself, I don't deserve it. So I am today asking people to really look at the concentration camp that is in your own mind, and the key is in your pocket.
So that's a big theme in your book, right? Those mental prisons and how we can free ourselves from them. Can you talk about how you recognize those mental prisons in yourself and how our listeners can recognize those mental prisons?
I make it very simple. I say to myself, you know, I'm okay, but I am not this, but I'm not that. So get rid of the but and say, yes, and I am one of a kind, I'm unique, and there'll never be another me. So you become your own best encourager, and yes, I am, yes, I can, yes, I will, to say yes, yes, and to be for something rather than against. Rather than saying, I don't like this and I don't want that, I'm not interested in that. I want to know when people say to me, I believe in this and I believe in that, I want to know what kind of life you lead, because love is not what you feel, is what you do.
It's a little bit, what you're saying reminds me of the kind of difference between, they say, between love and fear, right? We're always choosing.
The two emotions. And when you have fear, you have no love. There is no love coming out of fear. The two does not coexist. Yeah, and fear is not what you're born with. You learn it. You learn to be afraid of a dog because your mom is asking you not to touch the dog. Don't do that. Don't touch that. You're going to fall down. You're going to break your neck. You know, we need to really pay attention to what we're paying attention to. And I like to really look at the gift in everything. And in Auschwitz, I discovered my inner resources to look at life from inside out, not to wait. That's a very good definition of a victim, that people would just sit there and wait for somebody to come and liberate them. And I was with a wonderful girl from Yugoslavia, and I was very proud to be a Hungarian. And she told me that we're going to be liberated by Christmas. And you know what happened? Christmas came, and we weren't liberated, and she died next day. So wow. I think it's very important that the victim's mentality can be rigid, you know, all or nothing, black and white, life and death. And that is what I have learned in the concentration camp, to look at life from inside out.
Can you talk about the role that other people play in our mental prisons? I think of labels and expectations. You talk about that in your book. Are those mental prisons that we put ourselves in, or are those things that other people can place us in?
Yes, and one of the things that I ask people to get rid of are two words, always and never. I always do that. I'm never going to find a right life partner. And replace it. Up till now, I did this, and now I can do something else, because change is synonymous with growth. I like the idea of changing gears in a car and then releasing the clutch. So this is a good time out period to ask yourself, what am I doing now? And how is it working for me? How is it serving me? And maybe some things you're holding on to, and it's time to let go. But you cannot let go of anything unless you replace it with something else. Think of a trapeze artist. They're holding on because of the fear of falling. There is something down there or nothing. So I think it's important to also pay attention to perfectionism, that you want to do everything just right. I remember when I was invited to my granddaughter's school, and the teacher called my granddaughter my little red caboose because she was a perfectionist and she erased everything 10 million times. And she was in a class where the IQ started at 145. And she didn't think that she can really cut the mustard, and she was ready to step out of that class. And the first time I told my 10-year-old granddaughter about Auschwitz, that I couldn't change what was outside. They could throw me in a gas chamber any minute. They told me I'm never going to get out of here alive. And I did not ever allow them to murder my spirit. So that's what I am doing today too. I am guiding you to acknowledge that you were born with that spirit and that spirit never dies, and how I can empower you. Because, you know, we're born with certain genes, we have the environment, and then we decide attitudinally how we respond to the other two. And what you think, you create.
Yeah, what you're saying is so powerful. And I think we're all good at seeing the possibilities for other people, but maybe not so much for ourselves. We can yes and everybody else and say, oh, you've got these possibilities, but we're all our worst critics, right? I wonder if you can speak to that and how you can sort of set yourself free from that.
Selfish means me, 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 and nobody else counts. The other side of it is that everybody else comes first and then me. See, that is doing things in extreme. That's not a very good recipe for life. You got to be flexible rather than rigid. And you know, you have that all in the book. So you create the world. How are you going to allow other people to get to you or not get to you? You know, because you can push my buttons and I decide whether I'm going to take it personally or not. Never, ever defend yourself because you're going to be defeated. Just say thank you for your opinion. Because in the English language, when somebody is angry, you're going to hear the word you. You give me a headache, you do this, and you're stupid. And you say to yourself, I'm practicing my low frustration tolerance level, and the longer they talk, the more relaxed I become. You take the negative stimuli, immediately turn it into positive. And that's what I learned in Auschwitz, when I was told the only way I will get out of here is as a corpse. That is very important to also tell you that, unfortunately, genocide is still with us as we speak, but never in a history of mankind, such a scientific and systematic annihilation of people existed. When 15 highly educated people got together and celebrated at the end of the day that they can put 30,000 Jews in the oven in one day, and I'm part of that final solution of Eichmann. So we don't compare who suffered more, but when you suffer, you become stronger. You don't give up. No matter what happened to your ancestors, no matter how badly they were treated, they never gave up.
Hi, I'm Dee. Danielle Belton, editor-in-chief of The Root.
And I'm Maisha Kai, managing editor of The Glow Up.
And this September, we're excited to bring you The Root Presents It's Lit.
It's Lit is a podcast where we talk about all things literature, literally.
More specifically, Black literature.
And we have some incredible guests lined up, including Nicole Hannah-Jones.
The last thing I want is us to produce anything like the Green Book.
Ijoma Alu.
Why this book? You know, why aren't we all picking up the How to Burn Down the System book? You know, like, why can't we do that right now?
The venerable Claudia Rankine.
I can't really separate the subject out from the structure. And the two things for me are actually what makes writing exciting.
And so many more brilliant Black authors, writers, and thought leaders.
We're speaking with some of the most distinguished voices in Black literature about their work, the books that influence them, and a lot more.
So please join us every Friday for some thought-provoking conversations. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And keep it lit.
Whoop, whoop.
I'd love to talk about that resilience of spirit that you're talking about. So when someone is feeling hopeless, you know, if you're looking at the world around you, you're really frustrated and you're feeling like, how could we ever survive the winter? Like, how are we going to get past this difficult period in life? Can you talk about how you find hope in those scenarios? Like, what you had mentioned in your book, the quote that your mother had told you about not being able to take something from your mind. Can you talk about that a little bit and how you might be able to find hope in times that are particularly challenging?
You know, I usually tell people not to cheer up a depressed person, but meet them where they are and keep that feeling company. Sometimes we have a tendency to use defense mechanism, and one of them is minimizing. So if you tell me how your pinky really is hurting, and I will tell you, you know, honey, that's not such a big deal because there are people who don't have any arms. And that's not really going to help that person. So I like to use two words, sounds like, and then put in a feeling word, because you cannot grieve what you don't feel. So you say, sounds like you said about that, that you do not say what they should do or don't evaluate a feeling. There is no right feeling or wrong feeling. There is my feeling. And give yourself permission to feel any feelings without judging that feeling. It's the way you think is what you create. Your feelings don't come first. You think first. And that creates your feelings. So it's two things is important, to think about your thinking and pay attention what you're paying attention to. Any behavior you pay attention to, you reinforce that behavior. And say, yes, I am, yes, I can, yes, I will, rather than I don't want that and I don't like that. And to be for something. And this is what I decided after I was liberated and I was in a cache and I realized my parents are not coming back and I wanted to die. It's easier to die than to live. And life is difficult. Look up your birth certificate. Does it say life is easy? Does it say there is a guarantee? No. Not even a certainty, but there is probability. The way I think, that's what I create. So be a take charge person, your thinking, your feeling, and your behavior. So before you say anything, you ask yourself, is it kind? Is it very important? And if it's not kind, don't say it because no one grows on criticism. You're one of a kind diamond. So that's why I do it my way and you do it your way. But together, we're going to be stronger when we can have negotiation, when we can have compromise, when we can listen to one another. I remember I was teaching psychology, and one of my students told me that in America people are hearing but not listening. I think it's very important to be a compassionate listener. Yesterday was my 93rd birthday, and I feel young because I am just the way I am off stage, on stage. Why? Because I give up my need for other people's approval. So when you switch gears in a car, you have to release the clutch. So it's a good time, you know, to ask yourself, what am I holding on to and what am I going to let go of? But you cannot let go of anything unless you replace it with something else. So it's very important to think about your thinking, because what you think, you create.
Something that sticks in my head is when you say nobody grows on criticism. Can you talk about that a little bit more and explain what we should do, how we should speak to ourselves instead of criticizing, and how we should speak to others instead of criticizing? Like, what's the poison of criticism and what can we replace that with?
First of all, get rid of the word should. You know, which God, which order, you know, should I have to. Have to's are things without which we cannot survive. I have to breathe. After 4 minutes, I'm gone. You know, you have to sleep. After 3 days, you will hallucinate. I think it's very important not to take things personally, because usually you just have to put an I in front of it, and the person is, when they tell you you are stupid, you have to change the you to an I. I am stupid. And that's what people are projecting to the other person, the very thing that they have problems with. I think it's very important for me to tell you that we all matter. God doesn't make junk. We're all beautiful, one-of-a-kind diamond in a rough.
Dr. Eager, just one last question I wanted to ask you is, what are the most common mental prisons that people fall into? Are there ones that are just really, really common that people should be vigilant about?
I think one of the things that is very important is to talk about victimhood, because when you're a victim, you're always going to find a victimizer. And then you can blame someone. And while you blame, you're still a child. You see, I think it's very important not to keep secrets, because what comes out of your body doesn't make you ill. I never told anyone I was in Auschwitz close to 20 years. So it's very important to not neglect yourself and not to be rigid and practice resentment and acknowledge that sometimes we judge other people, and there is a Hitler in every one of us, and there is kindness and goodness and Mother Teresa. So I think it's perhaps good to acknowledge that there is hope in hopelessness. And that's what I tell you is what I lived. I even found a way to change hatred to pity. I began to feel sorry for the guards, that they were brainwashed as children. You're not born to hate, you learn it. I love to get rid of the us and them mentality. We are all one of a kind. There'll never be another you. Many people can do what you can do, but not the way you can do it. So I like to celebrate the authenticity, the one of a kindness. So when I decided to go back to Auschwitz, because I was working with two paraplegics coming back from Vietnam, and one of them was angry, and why me? And conversely, the other one said, I'm sitting in a wheelchair, and God gave me a second chance. And I realized that I did not really take care of that 16-year-old girl in me. And I felt like an imposter, and I decided to go back to Auschwitz. So the work I do today, we revisit the places where you've been, but we don't get stuck in there. We go through the valley of the shadow of death. So when you're angry, just remember that anger has a lot of other emotions underneath of anger, and most of it is a lot of fear. A lot of fear. It's good to put down all your fears, from the least anxiety producing to the most anxiety producing. And I teach you how to get rid of every one of them. But you can't switch a gear unless you release the clutch. So you got to really ask yourself now, this is time out, just like in football, to regroup, to see what am I doing now and how is it working for me. Every behavior satisfies a need. When I'm hungry, I eat. But people are hungry for affection, attention, approval, and no food is going to take care of it. So it's good to really start somehow to have a king for breakfast, a prince for lunch, and a pauper in the evening. That is very important, that you talk to yourself, because it changes your whole body chemistry.
This has been so amazing. Dr. Eger, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for being with us. Really enjoyed this conversation. Thanks for taking the time.
I love you very, very much for being here for a moment. You're brilliant, and I am so glad that you were sent to me. People don't come to me, they're sent to me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Really appreciate
that. Thank you. God bless you.
And now it's time for Upgrade of the Week, where we talk about that one tiny thing that's making a big difference in our lives. Alice, what's your upgrade this week?
Jordan, this week, I want to sing the praises of the Instagram algorithm. Now, I know you had discussed this last week with finding exercise programs to do for free. My interests lie in a totally different place, which is finding the most satisfying dog rescue video I can find, and then letting the algorithm just, you know, wash over me, just go from one video to the next, instead of, say, watching the debate or reading the paper or thinking.
That sounds like the opposite of doom scrolling.
It really is. And I thought this was maybe a bad habit, but my therapist approved. So I'm going to sell it to everybody, which is start watching. May I suggest the dodo, just for a very basic, like, here's a mangy dog who they give a pill to, no longer has mange and is now happy and has found his forever home. And then he just goes on to the next one. Here's a hostile cat who finds a nice person to pet him and is no longer hostile. Or better yet, befriends a duck.
Yes, when they befriend strange animals, like things that become friends with owls, how could your heart not melt? I love it.
Come on.
Just make friends with an owl.
Just make friends with a fucking owl. That's all we need in this world.
Yep.
I want an otter who's got a wife.
And if I can't write a story on fanfiction.net about your friendship, is it even worthwhile?
It is useless. I want an otter who has a wife who's going to visit me at my lakefront getaway every morning. That's
beautiful.
What I want.
Beautiful.
So, yes.
Another hack that I should use one week is scapegoating your therapist. Like, if you could just put the therapist seal of approval on anything you do, people just give it a certain amount of credibility. Like, I did this thing, my therapist approved. And then continue your explanation, and people will be like, yes. Yes. This is good,
it's good
advice.
No, it's good now. Jordan, what's your upgrade?
My upgrade is one that I sort of forget about by nature of what it is, which is turning off notifications. I forget that notifications exist because I turn off notifications. Once I download any new app, once I start any new service, if I start Slack on a new computer and it gives you that notification about enabling desktop notifications, no. I disable all of them. Mm-hmm. And I never, ever get notifications for things. Let me tell you, your phone is a shackle and you can just free yourself from
it.
If you just turn off notifications, and then you'll only check things when you actually want to.
Yes.
When you actually are like, let me see if I have this email that I'm looking for, or let me see if I, you know, want to send this text message or whatever. If you turn off all notifications except for things that are, you know, really essential or a timer that you set up or something like that, it makes my relationship with my phone 100 times better.
I think that is amazing. I could not agree more. I am all for it. I've gotten used to the, I turned off my notifications on my desktop, and I used to have a kind of lurch of fear whenever I'd look at Slack, and it'd be like, oh, 32 notifications. And I was like, oh no, something's on fire. But nothing ever is. It's always just people joking around or something.
It never is.
It's fine. It's fine.
It reminds me of like Marie Kondo's method to cleaning up your house, where it's like, you always think that you're going to like, what if I need this thing? What if I need it? I'm like, no, you don't ever, you haven't needed it in 17 years.
Right.
Like, you're not going to need
right.
it. When it comes to phone notifications, you think you're going to miss something. But like, if you need something, then you know when to check your phone. And generally speaking, you're not that important.
Right.
We're all fine. We're going to survive without notifications. And it makes it so much easier to operate without like having your phone vibrating
yes.
every 30 seconds.
Yep.
Especially if you're in a group chat. Mute the shit out of a group chat.
Oh, yes. You turn that shit off. Especially if it's a family
right
group chat. No, 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 no.
I haven't checked my family group chat in like 3 years.
I refuse. Thousands of texts. You turn it off and then you just watch some animal rescue videos. And you watch a
I love it.
Giraffe who's befriended an ocelot.
I feel like we could be therapists together, you and I.
I think we've got something. We could start saving lives.
Jordan and Alice's Guides to Mental Health.
Well,
Jordan and Alice can lead you to the promised land of perfect mental
health.
This
is our last episode because we will be pursuing this career. And that's our show. The Upgrade is produced by Michaela Heck and mixed by Brad Fisher.
Please rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen, and you can leave us a review there too. Those reviews really help us find new listeners, and it helps new listeners find the show. You can also reach us by calling at 347-687-8109 and leaving a voicemail, or you can write to us at upgrade@lifehacker.com.
You can also find us on Twitter @lifehacker, on Instagram @lifehacker.com, all one word, and on Facebook @facebook.com/lifehacker. Sign up for Lifehacker's daily newsletter full of tips and tricks and hacks at lifehacker.com/newsletter. And you can find show notes for this and every episode of The Upgrade at lifehacker.com/the show.
See you next week.
Hey.
Hello.
Dr. Eager, how are you?
I like your dimples. You're cute.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Oh, man, we should make that in the podcast. We need
oh, my God. That's got to be there.